it on two different tools just to make sure I don't mess up. Okay. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Excellent. Good stuff. This is episode number 9 of Frontline by Speak App. Our guest today is the one and only evil HR lady, Suzanne Lucas. Hi, welcome to Frontline by Speak App, the podcast.
Hi, sorry. Happy to be here.
Sorry. What was that, Suzanne?
Hi, happy to be here.
Oh, sorry, give me 1 second. I'm gonna do a little sting first, and then we're gonna go. I'm gonna intro you and then come in at the end of that.
Okay.
Hi, welcome to Frontline by Speak App, the podcast dedicated to helping you create a thriving workplace where everyone feels connected. I'm your host, Matt Warnock, and I work on the content team here at Speak App. We created the Frontline podcast because our business requires us to have a deep understanding of how to engage and involve employees from every level of an organization. But we don't want to just share this knowledge with you. We also want to learn from other leaders in the business world. And speaking of which, our guest today is Suzanne Lucas, otherwise known as the evil HR lady. Suzanne worked in human resources for many years in the US before moving to Switzerland with her husband. The inspiration to start her blog came from her love of advice columns, which she always thought would be a fun career move. She decided to turn her hobby into a full-time job, and her blog and freelance writing career is still thriving more than a decade on. So, without further ado, welcome to the show, Suzanne.
I'm happy to be here.
I'm looking forward to this. This should be a great conversation.
I think so, too.
Okay, so we always like to start off our podcast with a fun, easy question to let the listeners get to know our guest. So it's always the same question. So what I would like to know is, what's the very first app you use or you look at in the morning? And what's the last app you use or look at before you go to bed at night?
Well, it's probably the same app for both, and it's Facebook Messenger. Because I live in Europe, most of my family lives in the U.S., we have a family group chat, and I always want to see exactly what they've been saying while I've been sleeping. So that's what I look at first thing in the morning, and then I sign off at night.
So does that mean every morning you wake up and there's a kind of backlog of conversations to catch up with?
Exactly.
Good. And I always ask the same question or the same follow-up as well, because I think it's really interesting. Are you someone that reaches for the phone the minute they wake up in the morning, or do you leave the phone in a different room and give yourself some downtime first? How do you tackle that?
I am a reach for the phone first thing in the morning kind of a person.
Yeah, everyone says that with a kind of a sense of resignation in their voice.
Because we all know it's bad,
yeah.
And we all do it anyway.
Yeah, I sort of installed a plug-in station sort of near my front door, so away from the bedroom, and we leave our phones actively there. But even then, sometimes, you know, there's that thing that you need to do just before you go to bed, and it still creeps into the bedroom, and then there in the morning, and you grab it again. So even with the right intentions, it still keeps happening.
Yes, it does. It's an evil plot to destroy our souls or something.
definitely. Or destroy our sleep, at least.
Absolutely.
So before we get into today's conversation, can you start off by telling us a little bit about yourself and where, you know, the evil HR lady came from?
Well, the evil HR lady thing came about because nobody likes their human resources department. And you never hear anybody saying, "Oh, I love HR." It's always complaining. And part of that is due to just the nature of what we do in human resources. My friend Kate Bishop, who's an employment lawyer and HR consultant, says that the HR is like the CIA. You only know when they mess up. And, you know, that's really true, because good HR does all the stuff behind the scenes, but nobody sees it. So they just know that things are going good. And bad HR is really bad, and we all find out about it. So there's a lot of negative feelings towards HR, which is why I picked the evil HR moniker. As I said, some of that is just the nature of the business, and some of it is that we always deliver the bad news. I mean, if your boss calls you into a meeting and you walk in and there's the HR manager sitting there, you know it's not going to be a good meeting, right?
It's either really good news or really bad news.
I'm just so pleased with your performance. You're just awesome. Because if that's what he was going to say, he wouldn't call the HR manager in.
Yeah.
So we're the sign of bad news and all of that.
So tell us about your career before becoming the evil HR lady.
Well, I was in corporate HR. I spent most of my time in pharmaceuticals. And that's a fun business because there tends to be a lot of money in pharmaceuticals. So that's a great area to work, but it's also kind of volatile. And there's a lot of hiring and firing that goes on in that. And so I did all of that stuff. I was been very fortunate in my career to work with great people. And so I got great training and development over my 10 years in corporate HR. And so when my husband got a job offer in Switzerland and we said, what the heck, let's do it. I was well prepared to branch out into this new career of writing and talking about HR and doing trainings and things like that, because I had received training from the best.
And do you think pharmaceuticals was a kind of great training ground? As you said, volatile, but also very highly regulated, of course. So sort of the need to, you know, to almost strive for almost perfection, you know, for there's not a lot of area to go wrong there. That it sort of trains you into sort of best practices really early on.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things that when I first started in pharmaceuticals, I was managing the U.S. human resources data. And when the Food and Drug Administration would come in, they could show up anytime. They didn't need to make an appointment. They can walk in the door and they could say, I want to see an organizational chart of this department. And we better have that prepared. And you think, well, that's easy enough. But there were 30,000 employees. And with 30,000 employees, there's movement all of the time. So keeping that organized and making sure that at any given moment, I could print out and hand to a government official, here is your organizational chart for this department, and have it be accurate. Yeah, you really have to be top-notch, perfectionist. I mean, I'm not a perfectionist, but there is, you know, that need for perfectionist tendencies, kind of the neurotic. And I'm working with 20 different site HR heads to bring in the data and put it all together. So yeah, it was complicated and it was a very good training ground because it is so highly regulated.
And tell me, since you started in the HR industry, how have you seen the industry at large and the function of HR change?
You know, my very first HR job, I was a temp. This was after graduate school, and I took a job as a temp administrative assistant in an HR department. And their employee records were written on note cards and put in shoeboxes. And I am not that old. This was in 1999. No, 1998. No, maybe 1999. I don't know what it was. One of those years.
End of the 90s.
So 20 years ago. Oh, yeah. Gosh, I am that old. And now everything's automated. Everybody has their HR systems. We have a zillion different apps. We have different programs, everything is computerized. And so in that span of 20 years, we went from things on note cards and shoeboxes to this highly technical data that's available for us to use. And that data has really changed how we look at HR, because we're not just warm and fuzzy now. We also have to be able to justify what we do with real numbers. And that's kind of hard for the old guard HR, because you went into HR because you didn't like math, right? And now we're saying math is an essential part of human resources. And so it's been this massive shift from, let me talk about how you're feeling, to let me show you the data.
Yeah. It's really interesting. I think I've mentioned on this podcast before that obviously I come from a marketing background, and HR today really reminds me of almost kind of marketing a decade or so ago, where all the technology, all the tooling was coming in. And again, maybe traditionally you went into marketing because you like that kind of, I don't know, that Mad Men style, you know, thought of creativity and coming up with an idea and just going with it. But actually, it's become much more data driven. And the need to demonstrate ROI for your department is much stronger. And that, on one hand, is challenging and scary, but on the other hand, actually gives you a more important seat at the table.
Absolutely, because now we can say, look, when we invest in this training program, it reduces our turnover by this percent, which in turn reduces our costs by this many dollars. And that's why it's worth it to spend $10,000 on this training program. It saves us $100,000 in turnover costs. 20 years ago, we couldn't do that because we simply didn't have the data. And yeah, Now we do.
It just seemed like a kind of a nice to have before. Like, look at those cute little HR people getting on with their training, making everyone feel good about themselves. But actually now you can see that not only the hidden costs, those kind of sunken costs that organizations didn't realize were kind of maybe kind of towing them or dragging them down, but also the actual benefits of creating a well-trained, engaged workforce.
Exactly.
Very cool. So what other changes have you seen other than the technology? Do you think that's driving a different type of person into HR?
I think it is driving a different type of person into HR. One of the places that I like to hang out on Facebook is on an HR certification page. And I see the people coming in and they're taking their certification tests, and they are far more technical than the people that I worked with 20 years ago. And I actually came into HR as a technical person. How I landed there was that I have a graduate degree in political science, which was heavy on statistics. And so I was, first person in doing statistics for a grocery store company. And I was the only person doing that. And now people are coming with business degrees and with backgrounds in statistics and backgrounds in different areas than they were before. And it's making it a far more technical skill, which is good and bad. We need also the nice talking through coaching, but we need to be able to back that up with the data.
Yeah, our last episode was around employer branding, and that's interesting as well, because that's almost HR moving into the marketing space, or marketing and HR colliding in the way that HR and I, or traditionally what you might think of as IT or analytics, colliding in a separate way. So HR is really kind of spreading its wings and its sort of tentacles and becoming involved in every part of the organization.
Absolutely.
Is that going to continue, do you think?
I think so. It'll be interesting as we develop more artificial intelligence solutions to see how much people can take on themselves versus having a specialized person to do it. I mean, we see a lot of things about doing resume screening and even initial phone screens type things using a bot or artificial intelligence to ask those first rounds of questions. Right now, that really stinks. It's horrible, but it's getting better.
Yeah.
So in 10 years, are you going to need a low-level recruiter to screen resumes and conduct that first screening? Or will that all be done by computer, and then you can have either a higher level recruiter that has more clients and more responsibility step in, or does it go directly to the hiring manager? So is HR going to gain power or lose power as we're going forward in things like that? But if we can also get some of that day-to-day taken care of, then that allows us to open up to do more of the higher level advising and the employee relations things, which are critical to having an engaged, happy workforce. And sometimes we just don't have time right now because we're so busy screening resumes. You know, maybe we get rid of that and then we have more time. I'm not quite sure how it'll go. I am sure in the world of HR tech, everyone is battling out right now and hoping that they come out on top. We'll see.
Yeah, I think that's happening across the organization as well, certainly in marketing. But it makes sense that if you think about quick service restaurants or retail, for example, where the turnover can be as high as sort of 50 to 70% a year. So for a large organization, they're almost doing nothing but recruiting. And
right.
Recruiting for service level, often entry level employees. So you think the sort of the advertising, the initial screening of those applications, to automate that frees up a whole lot of time. The question is, does the organization see that as free time to move into more strategic work, or does it see it as a cost saving?
Right. And that's a good question. And one of the things is that nobody likes to give up their power. So of course your heads of HR are going to want to make it into a, you know, now we can do more strategic work. And then we have the battle with finance that says, hey, wait, we were fine without these extra, you know, business partners. We don't need that. Let's just fire the low-level recruiters. We don't need them anymore. We have an app to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, it, like you said, in the fast food last Saturday, my children talked me into going to McDonald's, and, you know, we ordered everything on a touchscreen. I paid with my credit card on a touchscreen. You know, I didn't have to stand at the counter and try to make decisions or whatever. Things are changing.
Yeah, and it's interesting, again, on a recent podcast we discussed McDonald's as a great example of that. And also internally, they're doing a great job of creating a self-serve environment for employees where they can, you know, have a one-stop shop where they can chat with other with their colleagues, where they can access their schedule, where they have a degree of flexibility around choosing shift patterns. And really, that's sort of self-serve. You know, if you can do that around a Big Mac and fries and a milkshake in the store, why shouldn't you be able to do that as an employee about your experience of work too?
Absolutely. And it's something that's opening up that we never had before. And one of the things you asked me first about what app I look at, and that I said, you know, I'm talking to my family every day. My ancestors were Danish and Norwegian and Scottish, and they came to the United States in the mid-1800s. And then when you left. And maybe once a year you might send a letter back, but probably not. And you never saw your family again. And today, I'm just as far away from my family as my ancestors were from their relatives, and I talk with my family every day. Back at, you know, 20 years ago, if you were a grocery store manager, you only had the opportunity to talk to other grocery store managers at a quarterly meeting. Now, you can have a chat group with all of your store managers in a region, or all of the store managers in the company can talk about problems every day.
Yeah.
And that's a huge shift. It's a huge shift. And it can really give people support. But there also are some downsides to it. I mean, I can see a downside in my own life is that I haven't needed to integrate as much to Swiss culture as I would if I still didn't have my family and friends back home that I can reach easily. You know, so maybe this constant communication among people isn't going to be as fabulous as we think it is, even if we like it. And there's so much we haven't learned yet because it's all new. We have all these new tools.
Yeah, it's so interesting to see as that kind of, you know, Generation Z, whatever we want to call them, the digital natives, that as they hit the workforce, how they're going to bring those technologies and normalize them, because they are the truly digital generation that grew up with iPads in their pushchairs, you know. And I think that's going to be that kind of catalyst, and maybe the first signs we see of how this tech is actually going to really affect behaviors and relationships, and because the rest of us are still kind of getting used to things as they go, right? We're not as, we learn quickly, but we're not as, you know, as just sort of accepting of it, this is how it's always been.
Well, and it's a completely different world. I mean, 90% of what I do involves internet. I write on the internet, I research on the internet. I'm talking with you right now through an internet connection. I have a teenage daughter, and she spends 100% of her time, even when she should be in class, on the internet. But we're on two separate internets. It's like her world is so much different than mine. And as her generation starts coming into the office, they're bringing ideas that us old fogies haven't heard of. It's been available. I could find it out, but it's just completely different. It's almost different worlds. And I don't know how that's going to impact, because we're kind of having now a global culture. You and I are sitting in different countries and from different nationalities, and we're all one, you know, big, happy human resources culture. But we have these cultural divisions within that are different than our old cultural divisions. How that's going to play out in business, I don't know. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, it is. And what I'm always sort of intrigued by as well is the, not only that kind of learning or the interaction with technology, but almost the change of a viewpoint as someone enters the workforce, because how long are maybe the traditional kind of career paths or even paths before the career, the education, further education, higher education, how long is that relevant in a world where you can learn to code on YouTube? You know, that people come to the workforce with such a different mindset, or young people now, than sort of having to start from the bottom and work their way up. They could potentially be experts at something before they even get there.
Right. And how much are we going to continue to rely on this need for a specialized degree or even a degree at all? And you know, that's one thing I see here in Switzerland. They are very much into, you have to have the proper certificate to do this job. So if you are in marketing and you say, you know what, I'd really like to learn to do HR, you can't just transfer within your company. They make you go out and get a human resources certificate before you can come back and do this different job. And the world is changing, and a lot of now the big global companies are not doing that anymore. They're like, well, if you've learned it on your own, you can come, or we'll train you or whatever. And it's really shaking things up, because you know the Swiss have this whole system of degrees and certificates and diplomas that you're supposed to have. And now you have the big companies coming in globally and saying, yeah, we don't need that anymore. And so how do you prepare your workforce when suddenly the rules have changed?
Yeah.
And I can see that happening with the university level in the United States. College is super expensive there. And if I want to do, like you said, coding, do I really need to take a history class, a biology class, you know, and two different gym classes in addition to my computer science classes in order to be qualified?
Yeah. In my sort of previous life before moving to the dark side of marketing, as I like to say, I was a journalist. And I get asked, from sort of friends who have children coming up to maybe high school or university age, and asking, they're interested in maybe journalism. And when they're looking for advice, my main advice is, well, go be a journalist. That you can create your own blog, you can create your own platform, you can build an audience. And I would rather, and I think most publications are in a space now, they would rather take a punt on someone who has a proven track record of building and engaging and liaising with an audience than someone who's come out of university with a journalism degree.
Absolutely. And that's something that I do. You know, I'm primarily a writer. That's not what my training is in. As I said, my degrees are in politics. That was a good idea. it is. And when people come to me and they say, yeah, I want to do this, I'm like, well, start your own blog. You're like, well, don't I need to get published on Huffington Post? I'm like, well, that will come.
Yeah.
But first, start your own.
Yeah.
Because you need to build the audience. You need to have a portfolio. Now, a resume is not going to cut it. You need a portfolio, and you've got to build that yourself.
It's really good advice. So I think we could carry on talking all day, but I think we're trying to keep this podcast under 30 minutes so everyone can enjoy it on their commute to work or from work or in the gym or wherever it might be. So we're going to push on through to what we call the Thrive Five. So these are five, I like to say rapid fire, but actually we tend to get sidetracked, but five quick questions on bits of advice that you have for the audience on how to create a workforce that is going to succeed. So are you ready to dive into the Thrive Five?
I'm ready as I'll ever be.
So my first question, is there one single employee benefit that you think should be mandatory within every organization?
Yes, and I am coming at this from an American standpoint and not a European standpoint, which is vacation. And I know most of the world has vacation that's required by law. The U.S. doesn't, but most companies do offer it. But what I would love to see is a mandatory that you take at least 5 consecutive days off a year. It's good for fraud prevention, and it's good for giving your brain a break. And I think that's very important.
Oh, so true. I have a friend that worked in banking during a bunch of the sort of crises and fraudulent actions in certain parts of that industry. And his bank enforced everybody to leave their phone and their laptop for a week of vacation so that they could be audited at least once a year. And they found that productivity increased as a result of people taking that mental and physical break.
Yes.
So yeah, surprise, surprise, vacations are good for you. Okay, question number 2. If there was one piece of advice that you could go back in time and give yourself at the start of your career, what would it be?
It would be to ask more questions and to volunteer more. Because there's so much to learn, and HR is such a broad field that it would have been really great if I had spent more time shadowing some of senior people and learning some of the things that they were doing instead of just focusing directly on my work.
That's a nice point. I like that. Okay, question 3. What are the most obvious signs that an employer should look for in their workplace that suggest that culture might be suffering and in need of a shakeup?
If your turnover is going up, that is a bad sign. But also, before that happens, you're going to see a drop off in employee engagement and little things. If you're a company where everybody works in the office, but people start coming in late or leaving early, and not for fun reasons, but just like, then that's kind of a sign that things are going downhill. For if you have a work at home company, same thing when people aren't logging on. And again, this is when I'm not talking about a flexibility thing, like I'm going to be in at 10 so that I can go to the gym.
Yeah.
That's not a sign of bad culture. It's that I'm supposed to be in at 9, but I don't bother to get logged in until 9:15. And, just kind of that, I don't want to go to work feeling that people get. Those are your big signs.
Good, excellent. Okay, 4th question. This is one that I always find really interesting because I'm always making notes and for myself to follow up on. So what are the books or resources that you'd recommend to anyone who's interested in HR or business culture?
Well, naturally, you should always read my blog,
absolutely,
evilhrlady.org. a little self-promotion never killed anyone.
Absolutely not.
But another blog that should be mandatory reading for everybody is Ask a Manager. And Allison Green that runs that is literally a management genius. And you will learn more from that than from any MBA class you would ever take. So definitely, definitely do that.
Fantastic. We'll add that in the show notes for sure. And the last question, if you were to be kind of like, you know, beamed into an organization today or into the C-suite of an organization, and you were to advise them on one small, fairly easy change they could make in short term, short order, that could help their workplace to thrive, what would that be?
The problem with this question is that each company would have something different. You know, yeah. I'd like to say something like, oh, if you offer everybody lunch on Friday, it would be great. But some companies already do that.
Yeah.
So that's not necessarily it. So what I would say in that case is that I would ask the lowest level people in the company what they would do to change, because nobody ever asks them. It's always senior team sitting around the table that makes these kind of decisions, and we'll do this and it'll help all of these people that are entry level. Well, maybe you should ask the entry level people and then make a change based on that.
I think that's really smart, very, very wise advice. Ask the employees that you're trying to serve, right? Because managers are there to serve their employees.
Absolutely.
Fantastic. Well, thank you, Suzanne. It's been a pleasure to have you on the podcast. Can you let our listeners know where they can find you if they have any burning HR questions and want to get more information?
So you can follow my blog. It's www.evilhrlady.org. Or you can find me on Twitter at RealEvilHRLady. Or you can email me at evilhrlady@gmail.com. And if you forget all of that, you can just Google evilhrlady and I will pop up.
And we'll add all those in the show notes as well to make it nice and easy to find you. Well, thank you so much again. And thank you for joining us, listeners.
It was lovely to talk with you.
If you like the podcast, please leave us a review on iTunes. And if you have any comments or suggestions, you can reach us on Twitter, Facebook, or LinkedIn. And you can also contact us via email at podcast@speakapp.com. Thanks very much. We'll speak to you again soon. Bye-bye. Cool, we're out. Thank you so much, Suzanne.
All righty.
That was excellent. I really enjoyed that. I think we could have done about three times longer. But
we probably could have, but then we would put people to sleep. So exactly. We probably don't want to do that, but we certainly could have.
Excellent. Well, we can always follow up another time, I'm sure. So
absolutely.
Excellent. Well, I hope the weather's as nice there as it is here today.
Yeah, it's beautiful. And do you guys have a holiday?